Okay, but now we'll go back up to number 14. Antelope. Chad, you're going to do this one?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, Secretary Roebling, Chad Switzer, Wildlife Program Administrator. Sean's probably already left his camper, but I hope his minnow bucket tips over. Fishing, we got to be here on a nice day. So before we go through proposals, I'm going to turn it over to Andy Lindblom and Andrew Norton to present some of our most recent information on antelope. And I just want to also take the opportunity to thank, we have a ton of staff that work on this pronghorn aerial survey. A lot of staff up in the air, working long days, counting antelope. My big game staff, that team working on all the numbers, putting stuff together for the regional managers to work with their staff on developing recommendations. Our GIS staff putting maps and helping us organize data and whatnot. So a lot of stuff went into this that we bring forward to you here today. We've got some great data. Some of it doesn't look all that great, but we do have some great data here to, for Andy and Andrew to share. And I'm going to turn it over to those guys right now.
Thanks, Chad. Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We can.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Secretary Roebling, Andy Lindblom here, senior big game biologist. And like Chad mentioned, today I'm going to provide some updates on pronghorn research and management in the state. And Chris, I assume that's you running the presentation. I'm not going to share screen.
You can if you want.
Yeah. I brought it up. Let me let me go ahead and share screen if you don't mind.
Go for it.
All right, we'll see if I can get this going. Are you seeing the right screen there, the one that you should be seeing?
Yep. Yes.
Great. How about now? Do you see my note screen or the right one?
I can see your note screen. Or I can see the next slide screen. Probably okay. Can't see your notes though.
Can't see my notes. All right, let's see.
We can see your notes. Sorry.
Okay. I apologize. I'm not quite sure. Do you know where the settings are on that? How about that? Is that better or worse?
That's okay.
Why don't we go ahead and go back to what you were doing there, Chris?
I think it was the same thing with me though, too, Andy.
What do you, I got the technical expert Mike in here. You know where to push?
Behind you.
Okay. We're getting there. Hang on.
Down arrow.
Okay. I did.
Then share your screen right here. I think you're sharing this screen right here. Sure.
Promise you we'll get there.
Screen two.
Go.
How's that?
I think we're good.
Winning.
It's not going, Mike.
You're good, Andy. As long as you can advance.
Yeah, I'm not advancing. Ah, did it advance for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my apologies. Still not exactly what I wanted to see on this end. But yeah, we can get through this. So, yeah, like Chad said, a lot of folks working on this. We just finished up aerial surveys last week. So it's been crunch time for a lot of staff, but Yeah, I believe we have a good package put together for the commission here for consideration. And today I'm the lucky one that gets to present, but like Chad said, we do have Andrew Norton. He's in the background. He's locked and loaded and ready to dive into any data that we don't cover in the presentation here. So with that said, I'll get going. So what I want to cover today, of course, are our surveys. You know, our biological surveys, this is what obviously our recommendations hinge off of the data from these surveys. I want to talk a little bit about research. Want to talk about our objectives, of course, and then end with some population modeling that we do to determine license allocation needed to meet those objectives. So first thing I want to look at today with you is our harvest, and we'll start with our firearm season. So for firearm last year, you can see we sold about 5,000 licenses. Now for all of our general firearm licenses, as you know, are limited issue licenses. So we really control the number of licenses and subsequently the harvest. And you can see there back in 2017, we ramped up the number of licenses, and we've been over 5,000 licenses here for about the last 5 years. Harvest this last year was about 3,500 animals in our general firearm season. Of that harvest, about 1,100 were does, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time today talking about that doe harvest. We did see success the last couple years drop in our firearm season. Those 59% and 60%, although a lot of things can influence success, as we talk about often with our other seasons. We do believe this drop in success was likely a result of lower animal abundance. So a couple of our other seasons I want to mention here. Our mentored youth is the top graph, and our archery harvest is the bottom one. So for both of these seasons, these are not limited issue seasons. They're unlimited. You can see here I've graphed harvest for both of these. Total harvest is the green bars, and the male and female harvest are the red and blue lines, respectively. So for mentored hunting seasons, you can see the last 10 years, we've seen that grow in popularity. We've seen harvest grow from about 100 to a little over 400 this last year. Of course, our mentored seasons, those are doe kid tags, right? So the bulk of that harvest is obviously does. But you can see a few buck fawns are harvested there as well. For archery, similar trend, right? It's grown in popularity the last 10 years. We went from a harvest of about 100 to a little over 700-800 the last couple years. And a little different than the mentored season, the bulk of that harvest are buck pronghorn. So just looking back a little bit, historical perspective here, if you will, on harvest, looking back the last, 30 years here, you can see all the firearm season harvest combined. So that's the yellow line, that's our general season, our land on our own land, and our mentored youth combined, and also archery in the gray. But you can see here back in 2008 was our most recent population spike, if you will, and obviously harvest was following that. We peaked out in 2008 at about 18,000 total harvest across the state. Our populations crashed shortly thereafter for a multitude of reasons. And since about 2013, we've been in the rebuilding phase. You can see the last 5 years, we've had total firearm harvest about 4,000. Archery harvest has been around that 600 to 800 animals total. So next I want to talk about our herd composition surveys. These are fall ground surveys. We do them in September. We do have sample size goals for each one of our DAUs or our data analysis units. Those are mapped on the lower right-hand corner there. We have seven basically study areas where we combine data for a more powerful inference. But you can see our sample size that we reached in 2022, we classified almost 5,000 samples or animals, so a really good sample. So this survey provides us estimates of age and sex ratios. So the age ratios are where we get estimates of recruitment into the fall. really important for population modeling and determining herd growth. And this last year in 2021, we saw 48 fawns per 100 does and 37 bucks per 100 does. So there I have, you can see in the graph, I have the fawn to doe ratios graphed out over the past 10 years. We've averaged about 60 fawns per 100 does, but this last year was a record low. And that definitely influences the population. We think that was a pretty big driver on why we're seeing some low numbers that we're going to talk about today. And definitely this has been an influence on some of the recommendations that you have in front of you today. So next I want to talk about our aerial surveys. Like I mentioned, we just finished these up. These are mostly biennial surveys, although we did skip 2021. So it's been 3 years since we did a survey. These are fixed wing surveys. We use Cessna 172 for the most part. We fly low level, 150, 200 feet off the ground. We have a systematic survey design. Basically, we're flying every mile and a half across the state, and that the width of our survey transect is a half mile. So we're counting a quarter mile out each side of the plane. We do that for the entire West River pronghorn range, and we extrapolate to the remaining two-thirds. East of the river, we count, we survey the entire area, but we do count out a half mile each side of the plane versus a quarter mile. So for 2019, and this is the last time we did it, right? Our estimate of adults was 33,800. I forgot to mention this. In this survey, we do just count adults. We start this early May, late April, right when we have really good green up and good sightability of these animals. But most of the pronghorns haven't hit, or the fawns haven't hit the ground yet. And if they have, they're hiding pretty good, so we're not going to see them anyhow. So this is just an adult estimate. That's what it was in 2019. And in 2022, our estimate was down to 28,300. And again, this is another important data point that is really driving some of the recommendations that you see in front of you today. So what's that look like across the states? So here you can see this is a density map. Per square mile, with the highest, the red and oranges, not very many reds because we don't have a lot of high density areas, right? But approaching up some of our highest density areas right now, that 5 to 6 range per square mile. And you can see the bulk of our population is in the western part of the state, the northwest and the southwest. And as we go east, that we get less and less animals. Excuse me. But we do have animals all the way to the river. And we do even have pronghorn in some of our East River counties that border the Missouri River. Probably a more telling map for today's discussion is this map. And this is the change in pronghorn density that we've seen from 2019 to 2022. So here's obviously now the red means something a little different, right? Red means this is where we've seen some substantial changes. 3 to 4 per square mile, and you can see some pretty big red areas there in the heart of our pronghorn range. So we really have seen some densities change where we have the bulk of our pronghorn. So that's kind of it for surveys. I do want to touch a little bit on a research project we have going on, because this is exciting and relevant, I think, to a lot of the discussions we're going to have today on what's driving pronghorn. We just happen to have a project going on. Unfortunately, it's not done, but looking at a lot of the questions that we have on what drives pronghorn. So this is a cooperative project we have with University of Montana. Paul Lucas is the PI professor on this project, and we have PhD candidate Molly McDevitt is working on this. So we've had about 3 years, of capture underneath our belt on this project, where we capture animals in two study areas. 2022 was our last year. But you can see the captures there in 2022 in our two study areas, one in the northwest, one in the central part of the state. We've got some really good sample sizes, GPS collaring all these animals, and we get some really great data. You can see the objectives there. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on them because we don't have results to talk about today. But basically, we're looking at habitat use and movements, how habitat use and movements affect survival and population performance. And then ultimately, we want to look at some things we have, questions we have about our aerial survey design. But just a little snippet on some of the information that we're seeing. This is just a little over a year of data from some of the GPS collars we have in our two different study areas. And again, this isn't all the data from those animals. It's a snippet of the data, but you can see we're gathering just an immense amount of data on movements and habitat use of these animals. And I'm really looking forward to the analyses and the results. Obviously, our populations are pretty interconnected between units. And even you can see a little bit between states there. So really gonna be some neat stuff come out of this project. So putting it all together, just talked about our survey data and some of our research data. We didn't dive into some of the survival analyses, some of the preliminary data we have, but we do have some data. Of course, we put that all into some population modeling, which gives us projections of animal abundance and growth rates. And we use that to determine license allocation, right, to meet our population objectives. But where are we? This is what we kind of look like statewide. This probably goes back a little further than I needed to, but again, that historical perspective is kind of fun to look at. So this is our aerial survey data. The blue, those are the adult estimates that I just talked about. Obviously, you can see dating back to 1970, so lots of ups and downs. We just talked about this 2022 number here. We're at about 28,000. The next number I want to talk about is that green line. So that's our total preseason estimate. So there we're adding fawns from our herd composition. And you can see how that relates to our preseason population objective, which is the green shaded area. So our statewide objective is about 59,000 to 80,000 pronghorn. You can see we were kind of heading that direction, but now our prediction is that we're definitely not going in that direction. You can see that final yellow line there. I did shade that yellow because we don't know what recruitment is this fall, right? And that's where we're estimating what recruitment might be in 2022. That hasn't happened yet, but our best estimate would be we're around that 37,000 mark. Obviously not the direction we want to go. We do believe that the recommendations that you have in front of you today will turn that curve and we'll be heading back up towards that objective. So that was a statewide objective, right? The statewide objective is just a summation of all of our unit objectives. And so let's look at maybe unit objectives next here. So each one of our units has a numerical objective. And here's what we looked like in 2019 relative to those numerical objectives. So I know you guys have seen these types of maps, but just a little refresher, if it's blue, that means we want to substantially increase populations there. We're well below objective. If it's green, we're just about there. And if it's red, we've overshot and we're above and we want to decrease the population. So in 2019, we had a pretty good mix of units that were in multiple areas or of objective. In 2022, not so much, right? We've seen a decrease in population and most of our units, we're in objective to substantially increase. So how do we get there? Obviously, we're making recommendations for the commission to propose that we believe we'll get there. One of the main ways we get there is to reduce that doe harvest. So here, just want to take us through how we're proposing to do that. Here's what we had for doe harvest in 2021. So for our firearm season, we had several type 43, 48, and 49 licenses. The total doe harvest from those license types was about 830. So over half of the 1,600 does we harvested last year came from those license types. The minter season, we harvested another almost 400. You can see for firearm archery, the type 41 licenses, which are the any antelope license, which are mostly buck harvest, but we did harvest some does there for the firearm season, a little over 250, and for archery, almost 100. And then for the landowner-owned land licenses, we harvested about 75 does. So with our recommendation, just on licenses alone, we have recommended the removal of all type 43, 48, and 49 licenses. That would write off the board, reduce that doe harvest in over 50%. So that 831 would be removed. For the mentor recommendation, that's a little less clear on what that would mean as far as a reduction in doe harvest. I think no doubt we would be reducing doe harvest with the package we recommend. But it's pure speculation on what that might be. We don't have any data to help inform that number other than it's going to be less. If the commission were to go along with the proposal to change the Indiana antelope licenses to buck only, that would reduce all that harvest of does from the firearm and archery season. Land on own land would be untouched based on a recommendation. So overall, we'd go from about 1,600 and something to maybe 300 to 400. So a pretty substantial reduction. The last thing I want to talk about is kind of what the impact of those recommendations are. We just talked about what that meant for a reduction in doe harvest in 2022, but what does that mean for population projection? And we've projected all the way out to 2024 because that's the next time that we would be meeting with the commission. So our projection again for this year, for 2022, is about 37,000 animals. In 2024, we would project that again, we're gonna turn the curve, bring that population back up, and we'll be at least 40,000 animals, depending on the specifics of what the commission actually decides to finalize. So with just the license change only recommendation that we have in front of you, and that's the removal of the type 43, 48, 49 licenses and a reduction in the type 41 licenses, we believe would be at about 40,000 animals. If you added on the restriction for the mentored youth season, we gain 200 animals. Maybe that's a little conservative. Maybe we gain another 400 animals, depending on how that shakes out. But we would gain a few more. Buck only, we gain a few more, maybe about 700 more. If you did the whole package, the license change and the buck only and the mentor restrictions, you'd probably be at about 4,100. And I wouldn't hang my hat on these exact numbers. These obviously are projections. Based on a lot of unknowns in the future. But I think the relative change from each recommendation is the important takeaway here on what it means. And that's what we have for a package for you today. And obviously I'll stick around for questions and discussion.
Questions? Commissioner Risler.
Thank you, Andy. What are the reasons that we're seeing such low numbers right now? Do we know?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Risler. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's some speculation, but we definitely have documented some things that support some of those changes, right? Last year, we documented a record low recruitment. So fawn production last year was really low at 48 fawns per 100 does. We haven't seen that low recruitment. So without a doubt, that drove some of the numbers. The year before, with some of our research animals, we documented some really low survival rates. It's not a cause-specific study, so we can't really tell you why, but we do know we saw some low pronghorn survival. And obviously that low survival on the adult does really drives some of those populations down if you're going to see that. So yeah, that would be probably the main reasons. We haven't seen a severe winter. Pronghorn are really impacted. They can be by severe winters, and we haven't seen that. So that's something we would have expected. But definitely that low recruitment and adult survival are driving some of those populations down.
Other questions? Commissioner Lockett.
I was going to ask when the deer and antelope populations with the drought in West River. Last year, you could see a gopher around 200 yards. These fawns don't have a chance with all the predators out there. And this year it ain't much better. And I think looking at it from my perspective, I think that's part of our problem, why we can't get the numbers back up. I don't know the answer to it, but it sure be nice to have, you know, put more money into some of those planes and stuff, because it was there that they would only fly for 4 hours and maybe kill 80 coyotes, you know. And when you got that many coyotes out there, it's pretty tough to raise much wildlife. Them fawns are just, they're devastated.
Through the chair. Commissioner Spring. Yeah, I don't think there was any question there. I just wanted to comment that I would completely agree with your speculation there that, you know, the drought removed a lot of vegetation, right? A lot of grass on the ground, and that hiding cover is really important for those fawns. And when it looks like a pool table out there, they don't have much to hide from. And without a doubt, we know coyotes eat pronghorn fawns. They can be pretty hard on them. And I think your reasoning has some logic that in drought, it's going to hit them harder. And maybe that's what we documented in our herd composition was part of the impacts of drought on that recruitment. It does make sense to me as well.
Commissioner Larkin.
Yes, Commissioner Larkin here. We saw some low numbers, some spikes to the low side in like 97, 98, and then again in 2012. If I recall, that was really tough winters. How did we react to those situations? Is there anything to learn from those situations? Because our numbers did go up drastically after that time.
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Larkin, yeah, that's good observation and you're spot on. You can look at some of those abundance historical trend data sets and almost look back and say, well, here was a hard winter. There was a hard winter. There was a hard winter. And it really does predict that because, like I did mention, pronghorn are pretty sensitive to severe winters in the Northern Plains. So we really do see that impact. How we reacted, I can't recall all of them, but, you know, I do know the most recent one. We received a lot of criticism after, you know, the 2010, 11, 12 on whether or not we reacted enough. And of course, hindsight's 2020. We happened to have multiple hard winters in a row, and we were coming off years and years of drought and too many animals, and we need to harvest more too. So there were other factors that played into that probably on how we reacted or didn't react. But I think we have learned from that. We actually had that exact discussion in a recent meeting we had, you know, talking about the recommendations to the commission. And one of the things is, yeah, we've got to learn from some of those past things on maybe we didn't react enough. And so I think that's part of the justification for some of the recommendations that you have in front of you today.
Other questions or comments? I'll send it back to you, Chad. Thanks a lot, Andy. Appreciate the presentation and the information you provided today.
Thank you. Yeah.
Chad Switzer, Wildlife Program Administrator here again. Yeah, thanks, Andy, for a great presentation, and I appreciate staff's work on all of that stuff. It's working on antelope recommendations is always nerve-wracking and a little it's all on a crunch timeline, right? Because we're waiting to get the survey done and then try to get you folks this information as timely as we can. But it's a nerve-wracking process, and I think we got a good data set. And as Andy indicated, the recommendations we have in front of you here today are we've learned from the past. I think we probably did not react as quickly as we may have should back in 2012. We had three consecutive tough winters. We had a statewide drought in 2012, and we've got data here to support these recommendations. We feel strongly, and we want to try to get us moving in that direction sooner rather than later, and thus the recommendations we have today. So, Mr. Chair, on page 30 would be the antelope hunting season. Again, these would be for two-year recommendations for 2022 and 23. I won't go over the proposed changes that you already have in front of you. We have no recommended changes there on the adjustments to the maximum number of licenses established in rule, and then adding Campbell County to Potter and Woolworth County. The recommended change that we want to discuss with you here today for your consideration, as Andy indicated, we looked at our license type, those allocations and the harvest coming from those license types. And our recommend, you know, none of these are significant in and of themselves, but cumulative, I think they do have an effect. And therefore, you're going to be seeing a package here. And so for this season, in rule, we'd recommend changing that one tag any antelope license to just a one tag antelope license. And you will see on the table of license allocations, a conversion of those tags to an any antelope to a buck antelope license, thus taking away that opportunity to harvest doe kids with those license types. I don't really want to take much more of your time. The supportive information, I hope you've had a chance to read. This will be made in the proposal that's made to the public, so they can hopefully understand the justifications that we brought forward for you here today. And I guess depending upon your formal action, just so you know, those tag types that we reference in the PowerPoint presentation, like a tag type 43, 48, and 49, those are mostly for the allowance of a doe kid on one of those tags associated with those licenses. So the only opportunity for a female antelope, if you decide to move forward with our recommendations, would be for the landowner owned land licenses. And then for the special antelope, the 50 resident and 50 non-resident, those would remain as any antelope as those have already been issued to those successful applicants. So, Mr. Chair, in a nutshell, unless we want to have some more discussion here, this would be the only change to your current proposal we would have for you on the regular antelope season.
Okay. One thing I did have a question before we move on. The 75 for the landowner owned land, is that like based on an average, or where did we come up with 75?
That would have been off of last year's harvest estimates, the 75 females off those.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we can do the recommendation includes both the mentor and everything, correct?
There's a separate action sheet for that, Mr. Chair, okay. Coming up here.
Commissioner Bees.
Commissioner Bees here. When our objectives are so low from under where we want to have them, I believe everybody needs to do their part to help to bring that population back, and that includes landowners. And so as far as I'm concerned, I think there should be no antlerless tags whatsoever. And we all have to do our part. Everybody has to sacrifice maybe a year or two, three hunting seasons. But that ain't eliminating you from hunting, because you can still get a buck tag. So in my opinion, everybody needs to step up and help this situation. And my opinion is eliminate all antlerless tags and go to one buck tag.
Through the chair, Commissioner Bees, that's a great comment, and that's one we did discuss internally as well. However, I believe those license types for those landowner-owned land licenses are established in state law as an antlerless, the two-tag license. So I don't think we have the authority here to address that today, but Secretary Roebling,
you're continuing.
Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah, if that's under state law, that's understandable. But like I've always said, manage wildlife first and people come second. And that's where we need to do it.
Other questions or comments?
Yeah, Commissioner Littmeyer. Thank you, Chad. Could you look at that wording, an unlimited number of one-tag antelope licenses? Tell it was meant to be written out one tag antelope.
Through the chair, Commissioner Whitmer, what are you on page 30?
I'm on 34.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I saw something else that that was on, I believe that's with the archery antelope.
Okay. You can talk about that.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I saw that wording and it was confusing. We'll talk about that later. Yeah. Thank you. So we would, you know, I don't know what we want to have for discussion here, or if we want to move forward with the department recommendation, we need a motion to amend your current proposal.
Sure. At this time, I'd entertain a motion. Motion and second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Chip.
Mr. Chair, on to page 33 would be the archery antelope hunting season. Again, another tier recommendation. Currently in rule, as Commissioner Whitmire alluded to here, right now these licenses are unlimited in nature. There's no drawing process for these. I believe Andy went over or showed some of the trend data of the interest in those licenses and the harvest occurring from those over the last previous 10 years. But the recommendation we have for you here today, we did not have one for you in May. We just didn't have any data to support any changes for you at that time. But today we do have a recommended change in rule that license type from an any antelope, which does allow the harvest of a female antelope on that license to a one tag antelope license. And then you will note in rule or through your action, those would be buck tag only as well. So no legal harvest of females could occur off that license type then.
Okay.
So that's all we have for recommendation, but yeah.
Question?
Yeah, Commissioner Reed, it's kind of misleading how that reads.
The change there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say one buck, and I mean, you put that on a license, reading that's misleading. Yeah.
Through the chair, if I can. And Commissioner Bees, that's a good eye. So we wrote that broad enough for that single tag antelope license for the commission to have the ability to dictate what license type would be valid for that single tag license. So maybe down the road when opportunity presents itself, that could again be changed by the commission to in any antelope license, allowing the take of a buck or a doe or whatnot. So if you're not comfortable with that, we can change that rule to whatever you like, but we just wrote it broad enough for you to have the authority to do that.
Why wouldn't you just say one buck tag? Because that's what you're meaning. You didn't.
Through the chair, Commissioner Bees, we could certainly do that instead of just going back into rule all the time and changing what is in rule. This would give you the liberty to do that via administrative action. But if you as a commission body are more comfortable stating what you actually want to do here, we can certainly do it that way as well.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
Commissioner B said, I think it's a really good point to bring up. What I want to share though is that format and that language follow suit exactly what we've done for the deer hunting season as well, whether we're talking East River deer season, West River deer season, in an administrative rule, we just say no more than X number of one tag licenses, no more than X number of two tag licenses. And then we come back through your administrative action where you have the license type and the number of license type by individual unit and track it then in the meeting minutes. So then it gives you as the commission more ability and flexibility to respond when we need to, but we're still following the intent of the law of having licenses in administrative rule, but it gives one step down for you then at the commission level here and at the meeting level to make the adjustments of license type and the number of licenses. So this is a similar format that we've done in other seasons. Certainly understand, because this is a big change going from an any antelope to a buck antelope, right? And so that is a change. We just have to be very specific in our spreadsheets what we define as the license type and the number of those licenses by the unit.
So basically, if you get one of those units where you really don't want to change it too much, that still gives you leeway to come back and add a doe tag in that specific units.
Yeah,
without changing it.
Correct. We can add single tag licenses. We can add double tag licenses. We just put in the administrative rule that caps on the number of licenses of a one tag license or a two tag. But then that gives us the flexibility underneath that to use the various license types that we have, depending on the objective and the direction you want to go.
For the recommended change. Okay, we get a motion to move the staff recommendation. Is there a second? A second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, on
that's good catch.
Yeah, that was a good discussion. Mr. Chair, on page 36 would be the administrative action sheet here, I guess, where if you turn your page to like 37 and 38. And I believe Rachel provided a revised handout to you.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, they have it. We just had one change to one of the objectives for one of the units, which dictates a percent of licenses going towards non-residents, and that was for Millett and Todd County with the maintain there. So, Mr. Chair, this would be the license allocation and the license types. You can see all of those are type 42, valid for buck only, except for those 50 special antelope, any antelope licenses that have already been issued to residents and non-residents. And it was probably an oversight on our part to address Commissioner B's question there. We can make note in the meeting minutes, if you so desire to, just to have it formally that those archery licenses will be buck-only licenses as well.
Very good questions for Chad on that. If you don't have any questions, I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
But a motion.
Second.
We got a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Chad.
Mr. Chair, on page 39 would be the application for license chapter, and this is a chapter that spells out the validity of the Mentor big game licenses. And as Andy discussed, some of that, I believe Mentor season had the second most harvest of doe kids or the female population from the harvest. We had a ton of discussion on this, and we had varying opinions, and the more and more we talked about it internally and with leadership, this is what we came forward here for you today with a recommendation to consider. Right now, those licenses are valid statewide wherever there is an open unit, a firearm unit, that is. To try to address some of this female harvest and get this population moving in a direction a little quicker than we'd like, we decided there was maybe a compromise here with the Mentor season to change in rule where those are valid and make them valid on any hunting unit open for the firearm season west of the Missouri River, and for those licenses to be valid on private land only. And as Andy indicated, it's really hard for us to truly estimate the reduction in females from that, but we think it'll probably cut the harvest down about 50% is kind of a shot in the dark on that. We don't know the proportion that on private versus public land. We know this is taking a little bit of opportunity away on public land. Public land is very attractive to our antelope hunters. We want to ensure that we can get those populations on those larger public lands moving in that direction. And Mr. Chair, like we were talking, I think, at a break, I mean, this would be a really neat opportunity for a child with a mentor to have some experience there visiting with landowners, obtaining permission and just having those connections. So, Mr. Chair, that's what we have for you here today for Mentor Antelope. So.
Okay, questions, Chad? Yeah, I agree. Some people would look at it as a loss, but I think that if you can take a kid up to the door, knock, and learn some of those landowner and hunter relationships about asking permission and get that young person to engage with, you know, what it takes to respect landowners and create those relationships. That's an important part of what we're trying to teach as well. So it's just too bad low numbers are forcing us to have that lesson. So if there's no questions or comments, I'd entertain a motion. Motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.